Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX presents The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel. Provocative conversation about world issues. Now, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Hello and welcome to our program, The Advocates, on WVOX 1460 AM. My name is Richard J. Garfunkel. I am the host of this weekly forum. This program is coming live from New Rochelle, the Queen City, located on the Long Island Sound. It can also be heard live streaming worldwide on WVOX.com. One can call in to WVOX at 914-636-0110, but as I say each week, please stay germane to our subject. My guest today is Michael Shapiro, former New York City prosecutor, defense lawyer, and commentator on the Supreme Court. Today we're going to discuss the issue of the Second Amendment, what it really means, should it be more narrowly defined, and how do we as a nation deal with the atrocious level of gun-related deaths, injuries, and felonies. Welcome, Michael, back to The Advocates, and thank you for joining me today.
Richard, it's always a pleasure to be on your show, and I'm happy to be here today to discuss this important topic.
Thank you. Michael Shapiro is a longtime Scarsdale resident, a noted criminal defense lawyer. He was raised in the Bronx, educated at City College in New York, where he received a Bachelor of Arts with honors, later earned his J.D. from New York University. He started his legal career as a prosecutor, serving as a special assistant attorney general in the then newly established New York State Office of the Special Prosecutor for Nursing Homes, Health, and Social Services. He's been a faculty member of the Cardozo Law School Intensive Advocacy Program, has been a frequent guest panelist at the Harvard Law School. He's now a partner with a prestigious Wall Street New York law firm, Carter, Ledyard, and Milburn, which was established a long time ago, 1854. He's been a guest on The Advocates over the past few years, has brought his expertise regarding programs on the Establishment Clause, the future of conservatism, the implications of Bernard Madoff's embezzlement, the elevation of Sonia Sotomayor to the Supreme Court, and 2 years ago we compared the conservative Supreme Court to the early New Deal era with both the Rehnquist and Roberts courts of recent years. Meanwhile, as I say each week, the mission of The Advocates is to bring to the public differing views on current public policy issues. Public policy, therefore, is what we as a nation legally and traditionally follow. You know, Michael, in this past year, over 32,000 Americans were killed by firearms in the United States. Though this number has been stable for years, the amount of injuries has grown substantially. Without the expansion of EMS services and the ability of hospital emergency rooms, which now deal with these traumatic injuries, gun-incurred deaths would have certainly doubled. In addition, the amount of gun-related felonies are approaching 500,000 per year. Michael, are we facing an unstoppable epidemic of violence aided and abetted by the power of modern weaponry?
It certainly seems to be that way. I mean, we are far and away the most violent gun-using country in the world. And when I say far and away, the numbers are staggering. Other Western democracies, civilized countries don't come anywhere near the levels of gun violence that we have in this country.
Now, one of the critical issues facing the United States today is the proliferation of semi-automatic rifles, like the popular AR-15 Bushmaster, which enabled the murdering of 26 children and teachers in the nearby community of Newtown, Connecticut. There are also other weaponry we're familiar with, the AK-47, the Israeli Uzi. These things have been floating around in and out of hands of literally millions of people in this country. Why, Michael, is this weapon allowed to be in the hands of any citizen?
That's an excellent question. I think, Richard, that the easiest answer is that for the last 20 or 25 years, there has been a campaign led primarily by the National Rifle Association to put forward the notion that individuals have a personal right to possess weapons of all kinds, including these weapons of combat, these military-style weapons. And unfortunately, as we've seen, as we saw in 2008 with the Supreme Court's decision in District of Columbia against Heller, the NRA has been successful in its campaign. It convinced five members of the Supreme Court for the first time in United States history to declare that the Second Amendment to the Constitution includes within it a personal right of individuals to arm themselves. That is extraordinary. It was extraordinary. It's shocking, and I believe it's wrong. Mm. I believe the five members of the Supreme Court got it wrong, and as a result, I think that the conversation that we're having now in this country, as a result of the horrendous shootings in Newtown, Connecticut, in Aurora, Colorado, in Tucson, Arizona, at Fort Hood in Texas, at Virginia Tech in Virginia, that conversation now, because of what the Supreme Court did in 2008, has to include whether or not in this day and age the Second Amendment still makes any sense as interpreted by the Supreme Court in 2008.
Now, getting on that issue, focusing very sharply on that issue, one can talk about absolutism with regard to Bill of Rights. Is there absolutism with other areas, as we seem to believe that the NRA and the gun owners of America and other gun lobby groups seem to believe? What's this issue of absolutism, especially with freedom of speech?
Well, of course, as you know, you're an educated individual. You're a student of history. You know very well that the rights granted by the Bill of Rights are not absolute, and that goes for the First Amendment, which includes the right of free speech, the right to practice one's religion. Those are not absolute rights. The right to free speech is circumscribed. You don't have a right to defame people. You don't have a right to defraud people by your words. You don't have a right to incite people to riot and to violence. In terms of practicing your religion, we learned more than 100 years ago that the Mormons did not have a right to multiple marriages. If your religion includes the use of controlled substances, you don't have a right to practice that aspect of your religion. So your right to free practice of religion is circumscribed. All of the rights are circumscribed, and the notion that the IRA and other right-wing gun advocacy groups promulgate that there is no right to circumscribe the use and possession of weapons is absurd.
Mm. You know, the greatest Republican icon in the 20th century is the late Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan supported the Brady Bill, which authorized background checks for gun purchases.
For good reason,
right,
of course.
Right. And when he was
Brady was shot in the same assault in which the president was shot.
And when he was governor, he signed a 15-day waiting period for the purchase of a gun. Michael, what happened to his legacy on guns, and why does the Republican Party take its marching orders on guns from the NRA? Aren't there other funding sources for them?
Of course, the answer is, of course, there are. But the NRA is a strong, powerful, and freely spending advocacy organization, and they advertise that they have 4 million members. But keep in mind that their primary funding comes from gun manufacturers. They are a lobbying group for gun manufacturers, and that's where their money comes from primarily. And because other Supreme Court decisions, such as Citizens United, they can spend their money as freely as they wish, and they've been very successful in getting across their agenda, which to a great extent is based upon falsehoods and lies. I mean, they pay for their own research, and when it's examined, it doesn't hold up to scrutiny.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting that right now, as we speak, there is activity by Joe Biden, the Vice President of the United States, to discuss with all parties concerned about impending suggestions from the president on legislation. And it's going to be very interesting to see what comes out of his activities, especially meeting today with victims. People have been assaulted by guns, and tomorrow inviting the NRA. We're coming up against a short financial news break. I want to remind our audience they're listening to The Advocates on WVOX 1460 AM, live streaming all over the world on WVOX with Richard Garfunkel, myself. My guest is lawyer Michael Shapiro, and we're talking about the Second Amendment, guns, and the unrelenting violence in America caused by people with guns.
With business news at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour. Here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide.
From the Fox Business Network, stocks continue their upward trend, snapping a two-day losing streak as the fourth quarter earnings season gets off to a strong start. At 12 p.m. Eastern, the Dow is up about 80 points. Fox Business's Charlie Gasparino reporting that Morgan Stanley plans to start cutting their workforce starting Monday. People inside the company saying the cuts could include 6% of Morgan Stanley's workers. That equals out to about 1,600 jobs total. And the Venezuelan National Assembly has approved President Hugo Chavez's request to postpone his Thursday inauguration. Legislators voted to give Chavez as much time as he needed to recover. Chavez is in a Cuban hospital after cancer surgery and has suffered complications caused by a lung infection. Venezuela's opposition plans to ask the Supreme Court to rule on whether delaying the inauguration violates the Constitution. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Hank Weinblum.
The bill pay shuffle. You just did it. Can't pay this bill? Stall this bill. Pay this bill or else. Shuffling bills, loans, and working overtime are not your answer. Earning more money is. But you have so little time. IncomeAtHome22.com. With a computer and a bit of time and desire, you could be banking serious money from your kitchen table. No home sales parties and no pressure. IncomeAtHome22.com has been helping our listeners for over 10 years. So stop the bill pay shuffle. IncomeAtHome22.com.
We're always just a click away.
This internet is so darn easy.
Anytime, anywhere.
On my computer.
Streaming live at WVOX.com.
WVOX.
Now, back to The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to The Advocates. I am talking to author, lawyer, commentator Michael Shapiro. We've been talking about the proliferation of guns in America, especially semi-automatic weapons that have the capability of firing gun clips of between 30 and 100 bullets. See, since the expiration of the assault rifle ban in 2004, the number of shootings per year has doubled and the number of victims per year has nearly tripled. Three of the bloodiest 4 years since 1982 have occurred between 2005 and 2012. Of course, statistics can be manipulated, and the NRA and the gun owners of America and its supporters can find unlimited rationale when it comes to the ownership of all types of guns. Michael, should there be another ban on assault weapons? And is the threat of this ban why gun sales of these type of weapons are exploding all over America?
Look, from my perspective, there should be a ban on assault weapons. There should be a ban on clips. There should be a ban on virtually all weapons in the hands of private citizens, except those who can demonstrate a prima facie need for a weapon for self-defense. For instance, people who handle large sums of money, perhaps some physicians or pharmacists that handle controlled substances. I think there should be a requirement that before you get licensed to possess a gun of any type, you have to have a demonstrated need, not just a generalized fear that you're going to be assaulted somewhere, somehow. The problem is, of course, that now it's going to be much more difficult. The ban that was enacted and expired in 2004 under the Brady Bill came at a time before the Supreme Court decided the Second Amendment means that we all have a right to personally possess weapons for self-defense. The Second Amendment doesn't have anything to do with that. And because of the Supreme Court's decision in 2008, it's going to be that much more difficult at this point to enact effective gun control legislation. And that's why there needs to be a discussion as to whether or not, as a result of what the Supreme Court did, the Second Amendment still makes sense. Let me take a second. It's one sentence long. Let me read the amendment to you. It says that a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. The Supreme Court in 2008, the majority, led by Justice Scalia, basically eliminated the well-regulated militia part of the amendment. They wrote it out of the amendment for the first time in the history of the country. Let me tell you a little bit about the history of the amendment. When the Constitution was promulgated, it was done so to replace the Articles of Confederation that existed before. They hadn't worked well, and it was decided that there needed to be a stronger national government. The states were concerned about that. They were concerned about a standing army, that the Continental Army could become a permanent army, and they were concerned about their own sovereignty. So the Constitution, as a document of checks and balances, the founders decided to include two amendments in the Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment and the Third Amendment, that addressed some of the concerns of the states. The Second Amendment was to make clear that the states would always have a right to have their own militias. And the militia of the individual states was to be made up of the citizens of the state who would be able to bear arms to take part in the militia. The Third Amendment, which very few people know about, is the amendment that says that no soldier in time of peace shall be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. It's an amendment that has not engendered very much controversy over the years.
It's not terribly applicable either.
Right, but it was put there at the requests of the 13 original states as a check on the power of the national government, as was the Second Amendment. The founders had no conception that the Second Amendment had anything to do with an individual private right to own weapons. It had everything to do with maintaining a state militia. And as we know in our history, the states, a group of states in 1861, got their militias together and formed an insurrection against the national government. It became known as the Civil War. And that was the states using the power, the southern states using the power that was granted to them by the Second Amendment. But it was still in the context of the militia. It was not in the context of an individual right to keep and bear arms, which in 2008 in the Heller decision, five justices of the Supreme Court, as a result of 20 years of lobbying by the NRA, for the first time said, no, it means that there is an individual private right to keep and bear arms. And they've, as a result of that, it's going to be that much more difficult to enact effective gun control legislation, despite the fact that we are witnessing a veritable torrent of gun violence in this country, unlike any place else in the world. And keep in mind, there's no other country in the world that has within its constitution, not within its laws, but within its constitution, a notion that there is an individual private right to own and keep weapons.
Michael, before we go to break, I want to follow up quickly with that. The U.S. has the highest rate of firearm deaths among 25 high-income nations. Another study concluded among 36 high-income and upper middle class countries, the U.S. has the highest overall gun mortality rate. The overall firearm-related death rate among U.S. children under the age of 15 is 12 times higher than among children in the other 25 industrial nations combined. Quickly, we got a few seconds. Why do we need guns more than other countries? Are we a paranoid people? Is there too much stress?
I mean, when you come back, let's talk about the closing of the frontier, the fact that we are no longer a frontier society, and the fact that we have a very effective armed forces and police presence in this country.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And of course, when we come back, we're going to discuss the danger of owning a gun in one's home. The incidence and potentiality of death is between 27 and 50 to 1 by being killed by your own gun. We're coming up to a commercial break. I want to remind our audience they're listening to The Advocates on WVOX 1460, live streaming on WVOX.com. My guest is Michael Shapiro. We're talking about the Second Amendment and gun violence in America.
World and national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. Vice President Biden meeting at the White House this morning with people from gun safety and victims' rights groups, part of the task force President Obama requested after the Newtown, Connecticut school shooting.
On behalf of the president, we're reaching out to all parties on whatever side of this debate you fall.
The National Rifle Association and other gun groups are invited tomorrow. 57 people reported hurt in a commuter ferry crash in New York City.
The two critical patients are head injuries. 20-some-odd other patients were longboarded for spinal immobilization, and the others were walking wounded, taken to various hospitals.
Abdul Namoud's chief of the New York Fire Department's Emergency Medical Service. That ferry slammed into a pier coming in from the New Jersey shore, mostly people heading to work. A National Transportation Safety Board team's on the way to investigate. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 75 points. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Dry cleaning. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I have a real thing about this, and I've been telling you for years that when it comes to custom quality dry cleaning, you know, where you get your clothes back in perfect shape without that awful chemical cleaning smell, there's only really one dry cleaner that I know of in all of Westchester you can always count on. Scott Solomon Solo Clean. It's on the Post Road in Mamaroneck, New York. So if you want your valuable clothes returned in like new, pristine condition without that awful commercial cleaning smell, please try Solo Clean. The cost for their professional custom handling is really, incidentally, really the same you're probably paying right now. Solo Clean in Mamaroneck, New York on the Post Road. They're the best dry cleaner in Westchester. I'll go up against anybody on that claim.
Okay, class. Today's lesson is on cleanliness. Raise your hands if you think Dip-In Car Wash of Mamaroneck is a great place for your valuable automobile. Ah, good. Everyone is in agreement. Now tell me, what should my precious car expect when it enters the loving hands of owner Rocco Delvito and the staff of Dip-In Car Wash? Very good. You already know that Dip-In Car Wash is famous for their wide range of car washing techniques, including my favorite, Super Polish Wash, Anti-Wax Protection Hot Wax, and their Power Shower, which effectively removes excess dirt from your automobile. Class, did you also know the famous Dip-In Car Wash offers Armor All for your tires and interior? Dip-In Car Wash is open 7 days a week in Mamaroneck at 712 Mamaroneck Avenue, or call 914-698-9515. Westchester's famous Dip-In Car Wash has the most courteous attendants who will be glad to explain the many services now available at Westchester's premier car wash.
Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather is brought to you on WVOX Worldwide by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
Forecast Westchester County in the vicinity for today. We'll see partly to mostly cloudy skies. High temperatures will climb into the lower 50s with southwest winds gusting to 20. Partly to mostly clear this evening. Overnight lows falling back into the middle 30s. On Thursday, we'll see partly to mostly sunny skies. Northwesterly flow highs will climb into the middle 40s. Increasing clouds Thursday night. Here to some rain. Could start out as a brief freezing rain. Going over to rain on Friday afternoon as highs climb into the middle 50s. Mostly sunny on Saturday. Highs low to middle 50s. Partly sunny near 60 on Sunday. We'll see Pelletieri Jr. pointing for WVOX Worldwide and WVIPHC.
He won't be around forever.
Old Man Winter!
In the meantime, thanks for keeping warm with WVOX Worldwide.
WVOX. Now, back to the Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to the Advocates. I'm talking to lawyer and commentator on the courts, Michael Shapiro. We've been discussing the Second Amendment and the problem of assault weapons and violence that has been threatening millions and killing over 32,000 Americans almost every year. In our last segment, we talked a little bit about violence. I know Michael wants to get into some of the other constitutional implications. But Michael, using a gun in self-defense is no more likely to reduce the chance of being injured during a crime than various other forms of protective action. Of the 13,000-plus Americans who were murdered in 2009, only 215 were killed by firearms, 165 by handguns, in homicides that private citizens, law enforcement determined were justifiable. A study reviewing the survey of guns in the U.S. determined that most self-reported self-defense gun uses may well be illegal and against the interests of society. In other words, as I said before, the chance of being killed by one's own gun in one's own home, more than an intruder, or being killed anywhere else is 27 to 1. Is therefore this fear, Michael, of not having a gun in the house misplaced?
I think it is. Your statistics are right on. It has been shown time and time again in studies done by public health organizations, that that in homes in which there are guns, the chances of the residents of those homes being killed by those guns are, as you say, 27 times higher than the chance of using the gun to ward off an intruder. It makes the incidence of suicide much greater. It makes the incidence of accidental death by the gun much greater. As I mentioned right before the break, it is a long time since we have been a frontier society. It's a long time since the idea that there's no law west of the Pecos, where you're on your own. You have to protect yourself from marauding robbers, from train robbers, from Native Americans on the warpath. Those days are long gone. That is not the America we live in. We live in an urban and suburban society. We live in a society where we have effective, very effective policing, and yet the NRA and the gun advocates on the right continue to talk about the notion that we need guns to protect ourselves. Well, the fact is, Richard, that in states with lax gun laws, the rate of violence is many, many times higher than in the states with stricter gun laws or in communities with stricter gun laws. New York City, perhaps having the strictest gun laws in the country, last year had the lowest homicide rate in more than 50 years. The same is true in other cities with strict gun laws. However, in other parts of the country, in the South, in Texas, for example, where gun laws are much more lax, the rate of violence and the rate of gun violence is many, many times higher than it is in other places. I mean, and then if you look at the rest of the world, there's really no room for debate. Guns, this country is full of guns, and it's full of gun violence. And if Newtown and Aurora don't make the case that we need to control guns in this country, I don't know what will.
You know, knowing the framers of the Constitution dealt with this, namely James Madison, the author of the Second Amendment, they were products of the 18th century when their understanding of science, medicine, and communications was primitive. And by the way, George Washington, the father of our country, was bled to death at the hands of the finest medical advice of that day. So we understand there's been change. Would Madison and the founders, with the understanding of the growth of our police forces, our National Guard, our military, our layered court system, be appalled by the abuse of modern weaponry in the hands of the average citizen in 2012?
Without a doubt. Look, even Justice Scalia, the author of the Heller decision in 2008, said right in the beginning of his opinion, he says, like most rights, the right secured by the Second Amendment is not unlimited. From Blackstone through the 19th century cases, commentators and courts routinely explained that the right was not a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever, in any manner whatsoever, and for whatever purpose. He says, we recognize that another important limitation on the right to keep and carry arms, and he refers to a case that was decided in 1939, the Miller case, as Miller said, and as we have explained, that the sorts of weapons protected were those in common use at the time that the amendment was enacted in the 1700s. The common weapon at the time was the musket, and that's what the amendment was referring to when it was talking about keeping and bearing arms, a gun that took literally minutes to load, aim, and fire, not a gun that could fire dozens of rounds a second, hundreds of rounds a minute, like an AR-15 Bushmaster can. So the founders who enacted this amendment didn't envision the kinds of weaponry that you have today, and they were talking again. I can't emphasize this enough. They were talking about keeping the weapons of the time available for the state militias, not for personal self-defense.
Now, Michael, we have also went through periods in this country where we banned weapons like Tommy guns after the bank robberies and the kidnappings of the Dirty 30s. Also, we have not allowed our soldiers to come home from World War I and possess M1s and Vietnam M16s. Wasn't that a limitation on the right to bear arms of any sort?
Of course, and we don't allow people to have bazookas, and you can't keep a tank in your backyard either. Much less, anti-aircraft missiles. So, of course, we've always restricted the kinds of weaponry. I doubt that after the Civil War, the returning soldiers were able to take with them their Gatling guns. There's always been restrictions on the kinds of weapons, and my point is that the restrictions in this day and age should be stricter than they've ever been, because the need for guns and the idea that's put forth by the right, by people like Wayne LaPierre and Pratt and others, that these weapons are needed to protect the country against a tyrannical government. I mean, that's as absurd a notion as you could come up with. Are a band of citizen soldiers, right-wing individuals who believe that they're going to fight the last battle. Are they going to go up against the armed forces of the United States with their AR-15s or whatever other weapons they can get their hands on? I mean, the whole thing seems like a bad Hollywood movie, but it certainly doesn't seem to be based on reality.
Yes, there seems to be a feeling out there of Ramboism and Red Dawn and pictures with Patrick Swayze about fighting off the Sandinistas and the Cubans. Well, I want to remind our audience that you're listening to WVOX 1460 AM. We're live streaming on WVOX.com. My guest, Michael Shapiro, we're discussing the Second Amendment. We're going to stay a bit with the legacy of James Madison when we come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about this idea of resisting a tyrannical government, spoken from the words of Larry Pratt, Gun Owners of America, and other such individuals. Be back in a moment.
With world and national news three times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Discussions aimed at curbing gun violence now underway at the White House. Various groups sitting down with the vice president, who opened today's meeting, saying
the president and I are determined to take action. This is not an exercise in photo opportunities.
Joe Biden meets today with victims groups and gun safety organizations, tomorrow with the NRA and other gun owners groups. In Colorado, the prosecution rests in a hearing to determine whether the suspect in the movie theater massacre should stand trial. And a ferry accident at the height of rush hour in New York City this morning has the NTSB launching a go team to investigate.
Also accompanying the team are members from the NTSB's Transportation Disaster Assistance Office and our Office of Public Affairs.
NTSB member Robert Sumwalt, scores of people hurt when the ferry crashed into the dock in the Wall Street area. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Be sure to listen to WVOX Local News early mornings on Good Morning Westchester, brought to you exclusively by Trustco Bank. Need a mortgage? Think Trustco Bank for great savings with no PMI, no tax escrow, and no broker's fees. For more details, go to TrustcoBank.com. Trustco Bank, your hometown bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
We have ways of making you talk.
This is a crazy man.
WVOX Worldwide.
WVOX.
Now, back to The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to The Advocates with my friend and lawyer and commentator, Michael Shapiro. You know, modern scholars Thomas B. McAfee and Michael J. Quinlan have stated that James Madison did not invent the right to keep and bear arms when he drafted the Second Amendment. The right was pre-existing at both common law and the early state constitutions. And in contrast, historian Jack Rakoff has suggested that Madison's intention in framing the Second Amendment was to provide assurances to modern anti-federalists that the militias would not be disarmed, which is what you alluded to and discussed in depth. Therefore, one aspect of the gun control debate is the conflict between gun control laws and the right to rebel against unjust governments. We've seen chapter and verse on Hitler, Mao, Stalin disarming their public and being dictators. Some believe the framers of the Bill of Rights sought to balance not only political power but military power between the people, the states, and the nation, as Alexander Hamilton explained in 1788. Michael, many far-right supporters of unlimited gun ownership argue that the public must be armed as a protection against an unjust government. Again, what are your views on this? And should these armed citizens who disagree with choice or disagree with traffic laws march on Washington with their guns? What's your feeling on that?
Richard, as I mentioned earlier in the show, we have a national experience with a group of armed citizens of the states who formed themselves into state militias and rebelled against what they believed was an unjust government run by Abraham Lincoln. We went through that national tragedy. Do we want to do it again? Do we want to do it again in the context of Wayne LaPierre leading the charge this time, rather than
General
Stonewall
Beauregard?
Jackson? the idea that there's going to be a popular uprising to overthrow the national government in this day and age is fantasy land. It's not going to happen. It can't happen.
And why should it happen? That's the question.
Why should to compare 21st century America to Maoist China or Hitler's Germany is an absurd comparison. There's no one. This is not a dictatorship. There are. We could spend hours and hours going through the differences. This is a robust democracy where we have elections all the time. People get voted in and out of office. There has been no evidence in the 240 years of this country's existence that tyranny is going to reign supreme. Unfortunately, this is a country that's run by the rule of law, I don't think there's room for rational debate that we need individual ownership of guns to protect ourselves against a tyrannical government. It's never come up in 240 years, and throughout the world. I mean, we live in a worldwide society now. Do you see it anywhere in the world where there has been popular uprisings in democratic countries from the smallest to the biggest? I mean, are the Swiss worried about having to overthrow their government? Are the Indians, billion Indians, worried about having to overthrow their government? Are the French? Are the British? Are the Australians? It's fantasy land.
Well,
it is all part of the propaganda on behalf of gun manufacturers. And as you pointed out, every time there is an incident and talk about gun control following that incident, sales of guns go through the roof because the drumbeat is stirred up by the NRA and the gun owners of America that they're going to come and take away your guns. You better get them now.
Well,
and as I pointed out earlier, those groups get paid handsomely by the gun manufacturers to do this. It's time for the vast majority of Americans who think rationally, who understand that 99.9% of the police are out there protecting you. The armed forces are protecting us. That we have rational gun control in this country. I would like to see a national policy where you need a license to buy a gun, that before you get the license, you have to demonstrate a real need for the gun, that all guns are registered and accounted for. I would like to see technology come into play so that guns can only be fired by their owners as a result of a handprint or fingerprint kind of technology. There are lots of things that can be done.
And, Michael, this is available. It's interesting that two arguments that have come down have been the Swiss model, where everybody in Switzerland has to own a gun. In fact, most of their ammunition is locked up. They don't have access to their ammunition. That's interesting.
And also, the other example is
Australia, where they have banned guns, and they said, oh, there's a rain of violence there. What is forgotten is that gun deaths have dropped in Australia precipitously.
Yes.
Since the other country
in which lots of people own guns because lots of people are in the armed forces is Israel. But what is not talked about is that Israel has very strict psychological testing and screening. They know where every gun is. They know who everyone is who owns the gun. The ammunition is strictly rationed. It's far, far different. In Israel, you can't go to a gun show and then go out into the parking lot, unknown to the seller, and buy yourself one, two, or a dozen guns. It doesn't happen in Israel. It doesn't happen anywhere other than this country.
I have a caller. Go ahead, caller, and tell us who you are and give us your question.
Hello. Yeah. Just a historical point of order there. Your guest says that the Second Amendment had nothing to do with individual rights. It had everything to do with states' rights. That's not correct. The England banned the people from having guns, as did France. The only ones that could have it were the aristocracy or the elite or their standing armies, but not the individual people. And they wanted to impose that same thing on the colonists in America. So it had everything to do with the individuals being able to hold on to their arms. And the arms that they had were far superior to the British muskets. The Americans had rifles, Kentucky and Pennsylvania rifles. They were years ahead of the British muskets. So they were an advanced weaponry, and the individuals wanted to keep it. It wasn't a states' rights issue. So I just wanted to correct the historical record.
I think you are somewhat in error. It was for purposes of allowing the states to maintain their own militias, so that they were not at the mercy of a national army. That was the purpose of the Second Amendment.
Now, the purpose
it had everything
of it
to
was
do
the
with individual state
they
militias,
keep their
not
own
individuals,
arms,
and
as
not
a matter
an individual
of fact,
right for self-defense.
Thank you for the question. I want to go on. We're running out of time. I want to ask in conclusion. Senator Dianne Feinstein, a California chairperson of the Senate Committee on Intelligence, will introduce a bill that will address semi-automatic weapon gun clips and the sale and transmission of guns. What's your feeling on this type? I know you mentioned, and is the public ready for reform? And can the power of the NRA and the threats from the radical right intimidate enough legislators to block her efforts? We just only have a minute or so, Michael.
I think that in the wake of Newtown especially, I think the public understands that we need at least to start thinking about limiting the availability of assault weapons in this country, of weapons with big clips that can fire enormous numbers of bullets in a very short time. I think my sense is that the country is ready to get back to some degree of rationality, and that the NRA itself understands that the time may be right for some compromise in that regard.
And you're also pretty strict on the concept of this carry law. You would be very, very restrictive on carry laws regarding people having the ability to walk on the streets with guns.
Sure. I mean, I would like to see a national statute similar to what you have in New York City, the largest city in America with the lowest rate of violent crime, where you have to demonstrate a real need in order to carry a gun.
Michael,
I would like to see that nationally.
Right. Michael, we've run out of time. I want to thank you for your excellent observations and learned views on this incredibly controversial and divisive issue. Hopefully we'll see something coming out of the Biden Commission and out of the Feinstein bill. Thank you very much for joining me today.
My pleasure, Richard.
Thank you. If you want to hear this broadcast or any of the other archived Advocates broadcasts, you can access them on my website, advocates-wvox.com, where information on my guests is always posted. Next week, I'll be back. I'll be back, actually, in a few weeks, and my next show on January 30th, on the 131st birthday of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, we're going to discuss the New Deal versus the Tea Party with possibly Nick Taylor, author of the WPA, book on the WPA, and learned, distinguished professor of American history, Carol Birkin. On February 6th, I'll be back with senior law professor of Michigan, Yale Kamisar, author of Escobedo and the Fourth Amendment, considered the father of the Miranda decision. And we're going to talk about search and seizure laws with one of the top professors in the United States in early February. Thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.